love is doing the right thing. Because you have a steadiness about you. And I believe in you. But it comes soon. And you must be smarter than your enemy.
What are you trying to say?
Americans. They're very smart, but sometimes they can be incredibly stupid. They spend all this money and time and energy on the so-called war on terror. They put satellites up in space. They can ram a smart bomb up a camel's ass from a situation room 5,000 miles away. But every time the U.S. kills an Al-Qaeda leader, what happens? There's a new one before the body's cold. You do it a million times, and they never get it because the real solution always eludes them.
What is?
Do nothing.
Nothing.
Nada. If you want to shut down a fundamentally flawed system, all you gotta do is step out of its way, and it'll shut itself down. Nature has a way of correcting itself.
And we've had a go for auto sequence start. The SRB hydraulic power units have started. T-minus 21 seconds, and the solid rocket booster engine gimbal now underway. T-minus 15 seconds.
T-minus
10, 9, 8, 7, 6. We have main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1, and liftoff. Liftoff, and it has cleared the tower.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Insurgent Radio Network calling.
The station with the happy difference.
And this is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, in the heartland and in the bunker. Ready for another big shoe here today, right here on our stage. Yeah.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581 is the address. Address your mail to either Box Holder or Tom Metzger or the Insurgent, and we'll get it, no matter which one you use. Yeah.
Well, good morning, good morning, good morning. This is Terrible Tommy here at the console in north central Indiana. And it's a foggy day. Started out real foggy today. Wow. And very humid, too. Yeah, that's right. Hey, it's the ninth month, and it's the, what is it? It's the ninth day of the ninth month. Man, this month is moving faster than hell, man. Sorry, boys, I was out of the bunker for two or three times this last week or so. Had to go places to do certain things that I just had to do. So anyhow, now I'm cut up on my things to do outside the bunker, so we'll be steady from now on for a while. Okay. Well, the chaos factor is working its way in. It's doing a great job. with Hillary, the queen of the Amazon, with all her niggers around her, and Donald Trump with all his, I don't know what we're going to say about that. All his right wingers around him, yeah. They're off and running, man. Now they got somebody to squeal on Hillary. Yeah, about those emails. We'll have to see what happens there, but I'm going to tell you, just like with Al Gore, they're going to screw Trump, even if he wins the popular vote, he's still going to lose at the Electoral College. I don't think he can win the popular vote because of these millions of niggers and non-whites that are going to turn out to vote for Hillary. So he's depending on the white vote, and he don't have the white vote that too much. Maybe he got half of the white vote, but that's not enough. That's not enough. So we'll have to see what happens here. But soon, thank Thor, it's all going to be over, no matter which way it goes. I like the way the libertarian couldn't figure out in his mind where Aleppo was, in one of the hottest cities in the Middle East, been overrun several times, flooded with depleted uranium, people coming out of there all sick and dying, and a lot of American troops are going to come home with that poisoning, and he didn't know that. Well, I've debated the libertarians before, way back, and the thing I'll never forget is they were for open borders. Yeah, the libertarians, at least back then, were for open borders, and I don't think they've changed. Well, I see the black KKK is doing good work up there in Chicago, because they've hit over 950 murders this year so far. So it looks like they're going to make it to over 1,000 before the end of the year. Boy, I'll tell you, with a Klan like that, you can really get things done. Boys and girls, you're going to love this one. Talking about one's faith doesn't come naturally to a Midwestern Methodist, Hillary Clinton admitted, otherwise known as the Amazon Queen. Queen of the Negroes. Then the Democratic presidential nominee spent a half an hour doing just that, quoting scripture, hymns, and even St. Francis of Assisi as she described her activist social justice faith, otherwise called Marxism. Roll up your sleeves and get your hands dirty, faith. I'm grateful for the gift of personal salvation and for the great obligation of the social gospel to use the gift of grace wisely to reflect the love of God and to follow the example of the baby Jesus to the greater good of God's beloved community, unquote, she said. That's what led me to devote my life in ways I could to serving others. That's why she's got, what, $300 million in her little outfit that they've got, her and Bill, that's supposed to go to all this downtrodden of the world. Clinton's remarks came Thursday evening at the National Baptist Convention, USA's 136th annual session of the Kansas City Convention Center. They followed Donald Trump's address over the weekend to the predominantly Negro American congregation at the Great Faith Ministry International Church in Detroit. Ain't it Detroit? The National Baptist Convention is one of the nation's oldest and largest African American religious organizations. Wow. In her speech, Clinton remembered her father kneeling beside his bed to pray and her mother teaching Sunday school. What a chameleon this broad is. She remembered traveling from Chicago's suburbs into the city with her church youth minister to attend a black church for the first time and hear a speech by the Right Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. and shake his hand. She recounted the hard lessons she has taught as the occasional Sunday school teacher. Quote, we're not asked to love each other, not urged or requested. We're commanded to love. Indeed, Jesus made it his greatest commandment. She don't act like she loves Donald Trump. She repeated the Methodist credo that has peppered her speeches throughout her campaign. Quote, do all the good you can for all the people you can in all the ways you can as long as you ever can, especially if they're Puerto Ricans, Africans. Quote, for me it has always been about trying to live up to the responsibility described by the prophet Micah. that we do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with our God, she said. Are you getting sick at your stomach yet? If not, I don't know what to do with you. And she drew applause and shouts and amen, quoting the words and scriptures that have informed her belief, as attributed to Saint Francis. Quote, try to preach the gospel always, and if necessary, use words and from the Bible. Faith without works is dead, quote unquote, and we cannot just be hearers of the word, we must be doers. There you go. But it wasn't just about faith. Clinton also praised the gun buyback program at Tabernacle Community Baptist Church in Milwaukee, while pledging to support the common sense gun safety reforms. I wonder what the hell that is. She remembered this and celebrating the 60th anniversary of Rosa Parks, who didn't want to sit in the back of the bus. Resistance to segregation at Dexter Avenue King Memorial Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama, saying, quote, Rosa Parks may have opened up every seat on the bus. Now it's our job to create good jobs so everyone can afford the fare, unquote. Well, now white people are afraid to ride a bus, and the Negroes have all the seats. She pledged to reform the criminal justice system. Oh, boy. Watch out. Address systematic racism, especially the kind that terrible Tommy preaches. Raise the national minimum wage. Ooh, yeah, well, that sounds good. If we weren't going to war in countries all over the world, if we didn't have troops stationed in 135 countries, you could raise that minimum wage two or three times, at least. Guarantee equal pay for women. Support small businesses and bring back high school vocational programs. Well, that's okay. She called threats to limit voting rights a blast from Jim Crow past. In other words, if they ask you simply to show your driver's license or some other form of identification, that's racism now. And the Supreme Court has ruled that, I think it's North Carolina, can't ask people for their driver's license. And the insanity of it all. And she touted her experience as Secretary of State, wrestling with the hard choices that will drive you to your knees, with President Obama in the Situation Room. I'll bet they were all on their knees, but not praying. I can imagine what they'd be doing. As President, I will be your partner in this work of translating love into action, she said. Throughout the night, Clinton took several jabs at her Republican opponent, really hateful jabs. Clinton leads Trump 91% to 1% with registered African-American voters nationwide, according to the NBC Wall Street Journal survey released last month. That's why I tell you, Trump is not going to win. She got 91% of the nigger vote, and she's probably got almost that of the mestizo vote. And this is going to be another Al Gore situation where he might get the popular vote, but even then they'll take it away from him in the Electoral College. A lot of people don't know anything about the Electoral College, but it's there in case somebody gets by everything else and wins the popular vote. They can still screw them out. She said Trump has a long history of racial discrimination in his business. That's great. That's good. And she responded to his recent appeal to black voters in which he said, quote, you're living in poverty, your schools are no good, you have no jobs, 58% of your youth are unemployed, and what the hell do you have to lose, unquote. Which is actually very truthful. But don't tell the truth. People who look at the African-American, Negro, nigger, community see only poverty, crime, and despair are missing so much, she said. How about those millionaires and billionaire niggers that are running around? They're around Hollywood, they're around the sports, they're all over the country. What about all those guys? They don't look too poor to me. Clinton also spoke about about the humility she said is rarely mentioned in politics, but as important quality in a leader, admitting she'd made mistakes. No shit. And invoked the words of the hymn Amazing Grace. Quote, it's grace that lifts us up, grace that leads us home. We need a president who will do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with our God, she said. And at that point, everybody pukes into the bucket. And as she waddled out the door in her pantsuit, this is the music she heard playing behind her as she left the place. Well, I had to cut that off. That was too much for even me. Anyhow, let's see what's going on here with the rest of the baby Jesus crowd. Yeah, let's see here. Descendants of slaves sold by Georgetown call for a $1 billion foundation for reconciliation. Okay. So those dirty Catholics had slaves, man. A group of descendants of slaves, about 40 generations ago, sold by Jesuits, who happened to be Catholics, in the 19th century to benefit Georgetown University, called on both the university and Maryland Jesuits to do more to promote reconciliation after the horrors of slavery, asking to create a charitable foundation. Wow. The descendants proposed a $1 billion foundation and announced that they had raised $115,000 in seed money. Well, that's a long way off from $1 billion. An amount equivalent to the 1838 sale price for the 272 Negro Georgetown sold to pay off a debt. That amount is equivalent to about $3 million in today's money. Last week, Georgetown's president announced that it would apologize for the university's role in the slave trade, given admissions preference to descendants of 272 slaves. Name two buildings in honor of those enslaved people and create a memorial. Georgetown was responding to a report from a group of faculty members, staff, students, and alumni that examined the university's historical ties to slavery. But they didn't mention the $1 billion. I don't know what's going on there. They didn't mention the $1 billion. Where's the $1 billion in a 40 acres and a goddamn mule, you white jerks. Well, here's some more of it. But leaders of the nearly 600 descendants who signed on to the GU 272 statement said they asked to be included in that panel, but were not. And they called on the university and the Jesuits to do more for the public good. More for the Negro good, of course. The spokesman for Georgetown, Stacy Kerr, said in an email Thursday that they look forward to engaging with the group and learning more about their work. At the announcement at Georgetown last week, John DiGilio, the president, thanked several descendants for their presence and said, quote, thank you for your trust and confidence in this institution that might be able to be kind of a resource you just described. We wouldn't presume that we are capable on our own. That's the $1 billion. The opportunity to be able to find ways together to try to address some of the challenges that I tried to speak about that you just spoke of. This is at the heart of what we're trying to do as a university. Double talk, more double talk. The descendants' response added to an ongoing debate over how and whether the institution really is confronting the legacy of slavery. Student protests have escalated, and urgency of the issue in some campuses has had racial tensions nationally, and a growing number of schools are doing historical research, adding memorials and discussing slavery openly rather than relegating it to the past. Yeah, get it out there. Incidentally, there's a new book out called Pendulum, and that book is predicting how this country is going to come apart when the one side will not give the other side any chance to talk and air their views, and back and forth, it's coming to an end, and it will break this country in two. The book is called Pendulum. We appreciate the gestures of a proposed memorial to our enslaved ancestors on Georgetown's campus, and President Don DeGiro visits with some descendants but recommends development developed without the meaning participation of descendants can only be seen as preliminary. But what about the $1 billion there, man? We want that billion dollars, man. Don't say any more about the... They didn't say anything about coming up with that $1 billion, man. Well, they took a recent poll about is it appropriate for pastors or reverends or imams or priests to publicly endorse political candidates during a church service. Well, they've been doing that for a long time, getting around the election rules and tax... freedom of taxation. 79% disagree. They want to be able to endorse candidates from the pulpit. 19% agree that they shouldn't, and 2% they're not sure of anything. So there you go. The Negroes especially, but whites do it too. They use these church pulpits as a political stage. I've been to several political meetings that were in churches, and they had a veneer of religion around the meeting, and which to me is totally illegal. Okay, that's that. Oh yeah, I got a call from Richard Scutari last evening. And he's doing pretty good, except he looks like he's going to have to do his whole sentence, another 10 years. Can you believe those rats? And he's in the same pod that David Lane died in down here in Indiana. Yeah. So, now wait a minute, I thought he was down there in Louisiana. I think I've got something screwed up. He told me he was getting a divorce from his wife that he married while in prison because he thought it was unfair to her for her to wait another 10 years. He'll be 79 years old by the time he gets out of there. And so that's too bad, but they're still going to remain in contact and friends, but just not be married. More for her benefit than his. And they wrote a book about Richard Scutari. And unfortunately, one of the guys who wrote in the book, was involved in the book, turned out to be a traitor. And now is going around giving speeches against racism. So they're going to start from scratch all over again, and they want me to write a chapter for the book, since we've known Richard for a long time, And we've supported him, and you've supported him too through your donations. And so I got to get on that. So I don't really like to sit down and write long things like that. But for Richard, no problem. Oh, yeah, here's more about this religious. People can endorse candidates from the pulpit. This is your buddy, your racist buddy, Trump. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump said his pledge to let churches and other religious institutions endorse political candidates without losing their tax-exempt status is my greatest contribution to Christianity and other religions. They're going to love him for that. He's going to get a lot of votes for that. Because now they can take this tremendous amount of money they take in. They take in $400 to $500 billion a year, and maybe more, because a lot of it you can't trace. And if they've got that kind of an income coming in, they can cut off quite a bit of chunk of that to support any candidate they want. So you can see where that's going to lead. But even worse is for these preachers to be able to preach political from the pulpit at the same time have this tax-free setup. And the Republican Party has made the repeal of the Johnson Amendment, the statute that prohibits it, part of its platform. The good old Republicans. But Americans overwhelmingly view pastors making endorsements from the pulpit as inappropriate, as they should. About 8 in 10 Americans, 79%, say it's inappropriate for pastors, preachers, priests, imams, rabbis, to endorse a political candidate during a church service, according to a 2015 phone survey by Lifeway Research published Thursday. Quote, Americans already argue about politics enough outside the church. They don't want pastors bringing those arguments into worship. Unquote. Lifeway Research Executive Director Scott McDonald said in a written statement. Well, so Trump is throwing social conservatives a bone. The number has dropped slightly since 2008, when 86% of Americans told the Nashville-based evangelical research firm they believed such endorsements were inappropriate. Well, of course they're inappropriate. Separation of church and state. Those who identify as evangelicals, 27%, or expressed evangelical beliefs, 25%, are slightly more likely to view endorsements from the pulpit as appropriate, compared to the Protestants as a whole, 20%, Catholics, 13%, those who belong to other religions besides Christianity, 18%, and those with no religious preference, 21%, according to the survey. A previously released survey showed most churchgoers have heard politics preached from the pulpit, though few had heard a preacher specifically endorse or oppose a candidate. Well, it's easy to do, just wink, wink, they'll get the message. Still, 43% of Americans say they strongly or somewhat believe it is appropriate for pastors to endorse political hack candidates outside their church role, a drop from 54% in 2008, according to Lifeway. And 52% do not believe a church should lose its tax-exempt status for endorsing a candidate. Well, I do. But who am I? The survey of 1,000 Americans conducted by phone in September, the sampling error does not exceed a plus or minus 3.6 percentage points, according to Lifeway. Though margins of error are higher in subgroups. Well, they're not going to move against the church anyhow. When have you heard them move against the church that was using the pulpit to support candidates? When have you heard that happen? If you've heard it happen, let me know about it. Well, here you go, cat lovers. Apocalypse Meow. How a cult that believes cats are divine beings ended up in Tennessee. Unorthodox teaching, a strange family, and a cat rescue operation named Eva's Eden. You might rattle off a quick list of things that Columbia, Tennessee is known for. If prompted, it's the home of James K. Polk, our 11th president. Every April brings Mule Day and its parade and festival. You might even know about the race riots in the 1940s and the work of the defense attorney and later Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall. Color him black. It may also be the home of the End Times Cat Cult. Reverend Cheryl Ruthven and a few dozen followers left Washington State 3 years ago hoping to find a place where they could live in peace and quiet and wait out the apocalypse. Along the way, they hoped to rescue as many cats as possible. Those cats, according to Ruthven's writings and interviews with former followers, are divine creatures that will carry the 144,000 souls mentioned in the book of Revelation. But the group's unorthodox beliefs and controversial history followed it all the way across the country. In public, Ruthven's followers, who run a nonprofit cat shelter known as Eva's Eden, describe themselves as a peaceful group devoted to Mother Nature and living in harmony. They foster dozens of kittens in their homes and host cat adoption events in their air-conditioned mobile cat playground. Quote, "Our call has always been to help ease suffering, and we are Eva's Eden, bringing love to the world, one cat at a time," unquote, they wrote in a now-deleted Facebook post. But a group of former followers say Ruthven's ministry is a cult of personality, devoted to its prophet, who they say claims to be a divine Magdalena, a Messiah figure who will create a new Eden after the apocalypse. Those former followers say that they once worshipped Ruthven, following her every command, even leaving their families for her sake, showing how stupid people can be. They now run a Facebook page aimed at exposing what they call as an abusive cult. Well, you were morons to ever join it in the first place. Eva's Eden denies those claims. They say former members are a hate group founded by Ruthven's ex-husband, aimed at slandering their ministry. The nonprofit has responded to critics by denouncing them online, trading letters and legal threats, and then posting cute cat videos on YouTube. In early August, Eva Eden disappeared, 2 days after a reporter requested an interview with Ruthven and other leaders. Eva Eden's website went down, its Facebook page and YouTube accounts vanished, and the group canceled a planned public cat adoption at a Kroger grocery store in nearby Spring Hill. Nicole Walker, Ruthven's daughter and manager of Eva's Eden, also filed a criminal complaint with the Murray County Sheriff's Office against Rachel Gunderson, one of the group's critics, accusing her of harassment. It's the latest chapter in a complicated mashup of spiritual experimentation, charismatic leadership, and cute cat videos. Michelle Lampier first met Ruthven in the late 1990s at the Gates of Paradise, a small Pentecostal church that once met on the second floor of the former Sons of Norway Hall in Bellingham, Washington. Lampier was a new mom at the time and just started going back to church. Ruthven was known as Cheryl Walker, was one of the first people she met. She was a tall, blonde, rich, and had an almost irresistible magnetism, says Lampier. Everybody idolized her, she says. Every woman wanted to be her best friend. Ruthven was also had the gift of prophecy, according to Lampier and other former followers. She seemed to be able to know exactly what people were going through. When she spoke, she'd go into a kind of trance, as if God's voice had spoke through her, according to recordings of her prophecies made by followers. People would arrive early at church just in case Ruth Finn might have a word for them from God. In the early 2000s, there was a church split, and most of the congregation followed Ruth Finn to start a new church known as the Freedom Fire Ministries. Mary Gunderson, a former Assemblies of God children pastor and aspiring worship leader, heard about the church while shopping at Walmart. You know, Walmart drives a lot of people nuts, you know that? Gunderson saw a business card for the ministry on a bulletin board and decided to check it out. Quote, "I heard Cheryl preach that day and I was hooked," she said. She and Ruth Finn became inseparable. Gunderson says she would spend every free hour she could with her new pastor. Do you think there was something going on there besides religion? She soon became convinced that Ruth Finn wasn't just an ordinary pastor, but instead she was a prophet. And if Gunderson stuck with her, then her salvation would be secure. I didn't dream this up. This is true stuff, boys and girls. Quote, "I tried myself so I would not lose favor with God, that I would not lose favor with this woman," unquote. She says, a hint of what sounds like embarrassment in her voice. Well, this goes on and on and on. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Just another one of these cults. Just another cult. Uh-oh, here's another one. Just when you think it can't get any crazier, we come across a story like this. A legally licensed medical marijuana user and neuroscientist who researches the medical effects of cannabis had her home raided by a heavily armed SWAT team and was hauled off to jail. Wow.
Experience with PTSD. So for about 4 months after I had a very traumatic experience last year, I was raided by the LAPD. They came to my door. They thought they received a report that somebody was breaking into my house. And my husband actually was breaking into my house and kidnapping me, which I don't bizarre, but they came in with a SWAT team and they were searching my house, like okay, up and down on the ground, like crazy things.
So you, I remember reading about this, and you felt that the LAPD, that you were potentially targeted because you are a former government researcher, anti-drug, and now you are a very vocal pro-medicinal marijuana advocate. So tell me about what happened that night, or how did the raid happen, and what's going on now with it?
Okay. So this happened during broad daylight, so it was around like noon, and, you know, cooking lunch with my husband. We work from home. We had a marketing company. We also do advocacy from home and run a nonprofit. So we're at home all day, you know, literally hear some banging on the door, and there's a SWAT team, there's a helicopter. I've never had an experience with the police before, so I open up, I'm like, hi, and, you know, pushed out of the way, like, get out of the way. I'm like, what are you doing here? Don't worry about it. They come rushing in and with assault rifles, and literally just like sheer panic attacks. I've already had a panic disorder before in my life, and it was just like nonstop, just like sheer, like, I'm going to die, like, I don't know what's going on. And they immediately take my husband outside. At the time, he was my husband. He was my fiancé. But they take him down the street far away. I can't see him. They start questioning him. And they, like, start asking me, like, what's going on here? Like who are you kidnapping? I'm like, what
are you kidnapping?
Are you kidnapped? I'm like, I'm making lunch, you know? And then it got to be that they started to do a search of our home, and they found medical marijuana because we're both patients, and we have recommendations. I was like, here, let me show you my recommendation, you know?
Do you have a medical marijuana license?
Yeah. So we have everything legal in the state of California, but unfortunately we had a police officer at the time that either maybe he felt stupid for raiding a house under maybe the wrong phony 911 call, or who knows what happened, or because it was a targeting. He was basically saying, under federal law, medical marijuana is illegal. So we have to arrest you. We have to put you in jail. And then he was actually very angry about medical marijuana to begin with. He's like, there's no such thing as medical marijuana. It shouldn't be legal. Like, patients are drug dealers. You live near a school. Like, you probably sell drugs to kids. And I was like, no, I'm a researcher. I write books. And I try to help people. And he's just like, oh, you're a scientist? Well, then you're definitely making drugs here. And I was just like, no, I'm not. Like, why would you assume that? You watched too much Breaking Bad? And he was just like,
well, there you go. That's the copperoonies. In this free society we live in. Actually, when the guy found out there wasn't any big stash of marijuana, he said, the cop, the SWAT team leader said, well, anyhow, there's none of that here, but are there any Negroes around here we can shoot? You know, down there in Louisiana, they got a new state law that's against the law to be mean to cops. Yeah. So they just arrested their first guy under this new law. An American facing charges for the first time under the new state law that makes it a crime to be mean to cops. I shit you not. Police in New Orleans arrested 28-year-old Raul De La Toba on Labor Day under Louisiana's so-called Blue Lives Matter law. The first statute in the nation to define attacks on law enforcement officers as hate crimes. De La Toba allegedly smashed a hotel window in the French Quarter, then used a racial slur in addressing both nearby security guards and the cops who arrested him. Oh, gave him 100 years in the electric chair. An arrest warrant first reported by the Times-Picayune states that the NOPD sergeant instructed officers to charge De La Toba with a felony hate crime in addition to minor charges for property discussion and disturbing the peace. De La Toba called one officer a dumbass nigga and the other one a dumbass cunt. Wait a minute there. A drunk racist will make strange test case for the state's new law, which just went into effect last month. De La Toba's hate speech against officers does not appear connected to his initial crime of smashing a window. Anti-Defamation League director Allison Padilla Goodman told the Times-Picayune the pro-cop legislation, like other hate crime policies, requires some firm connection between the underlying offense and the evidence of a hateful motive. De La Toba is not accused of physically attacking any of the people he slurred, yet the warrant attributes hate crime charge to De La Toba's attack on individuals based on their race, sex, and occupation, apparently defining his verbal assault as a crime in and of itself. There you go, boys and girls. Louisiana statute allows prosecutors to enhance punishments for other crimes if they're committed against a first responder because that person's occupation adding employment as a cop to the list of protected classes under the state's pre-existing hate crime law relating to victims, gender, sexuality, race, religion, nationality, or age. Well, they're going to have a real mix-up on this stuff because all these blacks that take a swing or spit on a cop and all that, this is going to be something else. Most states, including Louisiana, already impose stiffer penalties for physical attacks against peace officers. You know, they're not peace officers anymore. No, they stopped being peace officers a long time ago. They're law enforcement officers. Get it straight. The novelty of the Louisiana law, beyond its rhetorical goading of the Black Lives Matter movement, is reform police practices nationwide. Lies in defining any crime against police as a hate crime. Hate crime legislation. Boy, you're not going to have room in all of these prisons. They're going to be overflowing. Hate crime legislation is a relatively modern invention, yeah. A crazy invention, meaning should be a meaningless invention. The first state laws cropped up in the 80s, and the concept hit the federal books in 2009 after the brutal, high-profile murders of Matthew Shepard in Wyoming and James Byrd in Texas added the momentum to the idea. Yeah, they sure did. They'll use any excuse to get what they want. The rooting glass. Incorporating any professional class into a body of law designed to protect traits like race and sexuality makes little sense. Loyola University New Orleans College of Law Professor Dan Ciolina has called the bill showboating for the constituents. The ADL itself dislikes the laws, arguing hate crimes should remain limited to immutable characteristics, those qualities that can or should not be changed. Well, ADL pushed them bigger than anybody. Laws styled after the Louisiana Initiative would allow prosecutors to tack on thousands of dollars in fines and 5 extra years of prison time in cases that trigger the protection for police, firefighters, and EMS workers. Most of this stuff happens at a time of passion, and it won't change anything. You can put a guy five years in jail, he'll come out meaner than he went in. He may go out looking for cops after something like that. The arrest warrant does not mean De La Toba will necessarily be charged under the Blue Lives Matter statute. The prosecutor will decide whether or not to act on the police department's recommendations, but the case appears to be the first time officers have invoked the law. Yeah, and these same prosecutors, if it's a white guy does something, they're going to prosecute him for sure. But many times they'll look the other way for certain black criminals. Activists seem the likeliest targets of the law. Police who break up street protests routinely charge demonstrators with resisting arrest, and assaulting officers. Cops around the country also have a habit of using assault charges to cover up their own physical abuse of citizens. It's going to get interesting out there in the streets. Going to get interesting. Yeah. Passed in May, the Louisiana measure appears to be an effort to troll protesters from the movement for Black Lives by picking up their Black Lives Matter rallying cry. Since then, murderous ambushes of cops who were escorting peaceful Black Lives Matter protesters in Dallas and patrol officers in Baton Rouge have given the idea a sharper edge. Similar measures are up for consideration in New York, Tennessee, Wisconsin, Florida, and even Congress. Many politicians, media figures, and voters are convinced that cops face not just the day-to-day dangers of a life in law enforcement, but a concerted conspiratorial war on cops. Well, I have mixed emotions about this because I think there's a certain segment of the cops deserve what they get. And many cops don't deserve what they get. But police are far more likely to die in car crashes on duty than in killed by an attacker. Well, that's because they drive too fast. I think cops should be prosecuted for causing the death of someone when they're going 100 miles an hour and their lights flashing to go get a donut. And they run into T-bone somebody, a mother and their kids, at a stoplight. These people should be pursued as killers. And overall, killings of police have been declining steadily since the 70s. So, what's the deal, man? What's the deal? Now, here is supposedly a hate crime in Antioch up by the Bay Area in California. They said the home was burnt. But all I see is a scorched metal garage door, about 4 feet wide, about 4 feet high. And obviously a metal door is not going to burn, but they're passing it off as throwing a Molotov cocktail to burn the house down. So let's listen to this.
Worse, there's new video linked to that hate crime in Antioch. The home of a black family was intentionally burned and racial slurs were painted on the walls. NBC Bay Area Cheryl Hurd is in Antioch this evening with that new video and a message from the mayor there. Cheryl.
That's right. They passed out this flyer tonight, and people are mad. They just can't seem to wrap their heads around the fact that someone would toss a Molotov cocktail at a home with children inside. The mayor said tonight that he wants the person caught and prosecuted.
This is a city that's built on love.
That is why people in Antioch are coming together to fight against hate.
During my 28 years experience of bringing my children up, I've never seen something so horrific in our neighborhood.
Police now releasing surveillance video of a suspect lighting three Molotov cocktails and throwing them at this Antioch home and running away. What you don't see in this grainy video is the suspect spray painting a swastika and the N-word on the front of the home.
I don't remember this ever happening in the city of Antioch.
Mayor Wade Harper meeting with the community tonight and letting the public know hate is not welcome in his city.
This will not be allowed to happen in our city. Our police department is taking this seriously. Our district attorney's office is taking this seriously.
Police did not attend the news conference, but the troubling incident has even drawn attention from people in nearby communities.
This wasn't a random act. Someone picked a black family and tried to burn them out while they were asleep.
We need to be discussing this whole issue of race and racism, not only in this city, but in this whole country.
I'm asking for our citizens to get to know your neighbors. Participate in neighborhood watch programs. If you don't have one, start one.
Well, let me give you a little clue. We've been through this hundreds of times before, but the swastika on the front of the house was backwards. Almost always, or actually always, that indicates somebody not a Nazi, not a Klansman, not a white supremacist, but it's usually somebody from the left or another Negro. Now, you wait and see. Let's see if they follow up by saying they arrested some people who are supporting Black Lives Matter or some leftist group, so-called leftist group. So, anyhow, they do it all the time, boys and girls. Well, since Brexit went through over in England to leave the Euro government, the rise in post-Brexit hate crime reports peaked at nearly 60% and is still 14% higher than at the same point last year, few figures show. The latest figures released by the National Police Chiefs Council that in the week following the vote for Brexit to leave the EU, the number of incidents rose by 58%. By the end of July, this fell to 49% rise compared to the same point in 2015, with the organization said the number of reports was starting to go down. The figures for the 2 weeks between 5 and 18 of August showed 2,778 recorded hate crime incidents across the country. Wow. This was a decline from 479 incidents compared to the previous week, but still 14% increase on this time last year. The council's lead for hate crime, Assistant Chief Constable Mark Hamilton, insisted that despite the fall, they were still treating and dealing the hate crime as priority. He said, we have, quote, we have seen continued decreases in reports of hate crimes to forces, and these reports have now returned to formerly seen levels for 2016. For this reason, we will return to our previous reporting procedures and will no longer be requiring a weekly update by the forces. So anyhow, says, this doesn't mean that hate crime is no longer a priority. So goes England. Maybe they're getting their ganoids back. Maybe they're getting some bulls.
I came from Germany in 1973. My late husband was British. I've lived here for 43 years. And I'm so scared now. It's like I said, hell has let loose friends of mine. Say they can't be friends with me anymore.
Why not? Why do they say that, Karen?
I'm so frightened.
What are you...
and they just say, you make your bed, you lie in it.
Well, they didn't say that. They just can't. They can't do anything to help you at the moment.
No, nobody can. I've phoned up the Citizen Advice Bureau, and they just told me I have to understand that people are frustrated. But I'm so scared. I haven't been out of the house for 3 days because I don't know what to do.
Apart from the dog excrement being thrown at your window, which is...
My neighbours told me that they don't want me living in this road and that they're not friends with foreigners. My friend Rosemary got a grandson who was 7 who got beaten up because he got a foreign grandmother. I'm so scared. I don't know what is going to happen next.
See, the way race is mixed up now, I think that this woman is probably black. And she had married a British white guy, or maybe not even white. And he brought her back from Germany over to England. But they're not telling you what race she is. And even though she sounds like any other British subject, she's more than likely a non-white or maybe a negress. And so they're not even talking about that. Well, that's what's going to have to happen to separate the races. There's no other way. It's got to be done as time goes on. You probably didn't know it, but we don't have a hate crime law in Indiana. Recently, there was an incident where they're trying to stoke up the fires to get it going again. West Lafayette, Indiana. What actually brought a 21-year-old Tippecanoe County man to the driveway of a Purdue University professor Saturday evening after a confrontation in a Walmart parking lot isn't exactly settled. This guy didn't live very far from me. Both sides told the JNC reporter, Ron Wilkins, different versions of who pulled out in front of whom at the West Lafayette store, who flipped a certain finger at which opportune time, and whether one told the other, quote, go home, fucking foreigner, unquote. And who provoked whom or drove the other off the road on the drive home. But there seems to be a couple of things not in serious dispute. One Austin Bradley Gregory wound up at the driveway of a 37-year-old professor, a permanent U.S. citizen from Canada, and a Muslim. There, Gregory was accused of attacking the man, kicking him in the head in front of his home. It's also where, if the victim's story squares off, the woman driving the Cadillac that followed the professor home sat behind the wheel yelling, kill him, kill him. Neighbors called the police, who arrested him Saturday night before releasing him on bond Sunday. 2, Council of American Islamic Relations, tipped off by a friend of the professor, was calling for Indiana to join the ranks of all but 5 states with hate crime bias laws. This incident points to the critical need for legislation mandating hate crime enhancements when an Indiana resident is targeted because of their actual or perceived minority group status. Well, he was a Muslim and he was non-white. Time allowed to sort out an ugly incident might end up telling us much about road rage as it does about hate crimes. But these are moments that make you check yourself and check your community and check all white people, because they're the ones that do all the crime. Well, the guy was originally from Egypt, so we can pretty well figure out what his race is. Well, one positive thing about this story is the attacks have caused the victim to reconsider his employment in the United States. He fears for the safety of his wife, his children, and himself. Whether he remains here after the school year will depend on whether Gregory and the woman, both white, are formally charged. Quote, I will not stay here if I don't see justice, he said. This country is not safe. Wait a minute. Pardon me. I will not stay here if I don't see justice, he said. In other words, incarcerate the white guy. Even though this Egyptian supposedly reached into the other guy's car, the white guy's car, and the guy responded because he had a wife and kids in a car, or a wife, or a girlfriend, or something. Quote, this country is not safe. There is no justice now. There you go. Shouldn't have come here in the first place there, Mr. Egyptian man. Just remember, no separation, no peace. It's impossible. Crime for cafe fire gets 15 years. Fargo, North Dakota. Minnesota man who pleaded guilty to a federal hate crime for firebombing a Somali black restaurant in North Dakota was sentenced Tuesday to 15 years in prison. Authorities say Matthew Gust of East Grand Forks, Minnesota, used an explosive made from a 40-ounce beer bottle to start a fire at the Juba Coffee House in neighboring Grand Forks in December. Prosecutors say Gus did not like black Somalis and did not want them living in the area. Well, I agree. Gus' attorney, Ted Sandberg, said during a 90-minute sentencing hearing that Gus was trying to get even after he and his family member had been previously robbed at gunpoint while they were working at a sandwich shop. Gus, 26, believed that the robbers were Somalian, Sandberg said, which is probably true. Just remember, no justice, no separation, no peace. As I close the show, 14-5.